You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast, the podcast about the beautiful club within the beautiful game. With me, Russell Guyver, and my co-host, Peter Marsh. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Russ.
And to slow it down, welcome back to Andy Bass, a regular contributor. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, doing very well, thanks.
Marvellous, excellent. Got your Albion hat on today. Very nice, literally.
Yeah, it's been a bit cold today, so I'm still waiting for the heat. Well, the heating is on now, but I'm waiting for it to kick in.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. That's all good. Yeah, it's getting chilly, but we're coming towards spring. We're coming towards the end of the season quite soon. The final run-in, anyway, for the season, where it's all going to start happening, including an intense period of games for us. It's sort of started already, hasn't it, really? Because we've had, well, the weekend match in isolation is fine, but we've got a midweek match this week coming up in the Cup. Then we're away at Fulham. Then we've got another midweek game and so on and so forth. The little matter of Rome, of course. Are you going and what do you think about the draw, Andy?
Yes, I am going and I'm very excited about it. Should be an amazing occasion. I think this is what you want to be in a competition for. You want these big glamour nights. Obviously, you want to get through, but I think we've got a chance of winning the tie. Yeah, it should be incredibly exciting.
Yeah,
I'm not being in the Stadio Olimpico for a football match. I've been there for a gig, but the atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric. So, yeah, cannot wait. I mean, the weird thing is, I was only in Rome 2 weeks ago, so yeah. I knew I'd be going back.
Yeah, typical of the way it works, isn't it? Well, you've doubly answered my next question, which was, have you been to Rome before? You've given two very clear indications.
Yeah, literally 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I've been before.
Yeah, it's a new one for Pete and I. We've in both cases got our stuff booked up as well. Hopefully, by the time people are listening to this, they have registered interest in tickets because that is actually already passed as we're speaking, and it will be well past by the time people are listening to this as we're recording on Monday evening here. Hopefully whoever wants to go has got registered and hopefully they can get tickets.
Pretty much everyone is going to do that because most people aren't, you know, foolish enough to miss a registration period.
Yeah, who would think of doing something like that? Yeah, so I may not have done that before in the past. Let's just say it all worked out well in the end for the Amsterdam trip. Thanks for bringing that up on air, Peter. Lovely. Right, okay, 1-0 to you. Hopefully I'll get an equaliser like a certain Mr. Lewis Dunk did at the weekend. Great segue there. 400th league appearance. He's had many more than that overall, though, of course. And what a way to mark it by getting an important goal. Getting the equaliser. We'll talk about it chronologically, so we'll get into the Lewis thing in a bit more detail later. But great for him, though, isn't it? The landmark and to get, I think it's his 16th Premier League goal.
He seemed quite pleased by it as well. As did Bart Verbruggen as well. The celebration that he had was brilliant.
Yeah, I think there was a great sense of vindication at the end of the game. Like we can sort of discuss my broader feelings about the result later. But yeah, didn't deserve to lose.
Everton didn't deserve to win as well, more pertinently. I mean, they were a pretty dirty physical team. And obviously, people are going to go, another referee moan again. But we again had a weak referee when we were faced with a big team, physical team, who time wasted the whole time. So, I mean, Gilmore's red card, I'm going to get a little bit of a rant already. Gilmore's red card, I get. I think there was incidents in other teams had over the weekend, which illustrate the inconsistencies of it. But I think if you go in for a tackle like that, you leave yourself open to getting a red card. The fact that the other two who didn't get red cards played for big six teams does always lead to the, you know, whole agenda for the big six. But my bigger issue with him is he didn't send off Tarkowski, who committed a number of blatant fouls after he'd been booked and before Gilmore got sent off and before the goal as well. One of which was a clear yellow card and would have been any other time. But for some reason, having already been booked, he didn't book him again. And you could argue his booking was worse than a booking because he flattened Welbeck.
Yeah.
They had two or three others as well where we had players like, I think Welbeck had one in the first half where he's running down towards goal and the guy tripped him from behind and he didn't book him. They kicked the ball away every chance they had. They time wasted every chance they had and he barely booked them for that as well. And I thought he was a pretty weak referee, to be honest, which is not what you need when you're playing a physical team like Everton.
Also there was a foul in the build-up to their goal where Ferguson was pulled away from a defensive position by an opponent and pulled to the ground, which I didn't see at the time. And to be honest, that sort of stuff goes on all the time. And personally, I'm not saying their goal should have been disallowed. It should be allowed. I mean, it's a physical game. But given the events of the following day, really, that I don't see the difference. That should have been a disallowed goal. But
yeah, I agree. If Endo is offside and getting in the way of a defender, then surely if a defender's fouled in that situation as well, it should be the same thing. Yeah.
And it's a bit
of a free goal as well. Bloody Branthwaite will hit that every time, about 100 times, and he won't score again.
Yeah.
It took it well. It was a good...
He did, but he won't do it. Centre-halves don't generally do that. It was a bit unlucky in that sense.
It's really unlucky because whenever you're featured on Football Focus, normally whoever that team or player is has a shit game at the weekend, so it didn't work for him.
He looked a very good defender, but yeah, centre-halves don't shoot like that into the top corner normally.
We are sort of getting ahead of ourselves to their goal now. But before the game, I feared Everton set pieces. Their players are fucking huge. And, and they create so few chances from open play. But, you know, they do some good work on their set pieces and they're pretty successful. And that was the third free kick in a row from that position that Pickford took. Both of those previous free kicks were dangerous. I didn't think we defended either of those too well. Maybe because the guy pulled Ferguson back, that made it easier for the ball the ball just sort of bounced back to him. But it wasn't defended well, and they took advantage of it. But the warning signs were there, and we should have been better. And as frustrated as I am by Everton's tactics and I thought the referee's performance in the second half was very poor. We didn't deserve to win that game either. I mean, we drew it because we weren't good enough to win it, I think. I'm not blaming the result on external factors. I would just say that, we didn't do enough. I'm glad that we got the draw because I thought we played play some nice football. I just thought it was just kind of ineffective football. The first half, especially, we played some lovely football. That opening 20 minutes was just glorious. And it's football that Everton aren't capable of playing.
Although, funnily enough, I didn't go to the game. I had to skip that one. I watched the Sky extended highlights. And they, at one point, amusingly were saying, oh, it's unusual to see Everton playing almost like Brighton because they were passing at the back for just one short period. As soon as he said that, they hoofed it forwards and gave the ball away, which I think might have led to the Welbeck chance where he poked it just wide. I can't remember, but I thought that was quite amusing. I listened to the commentary with Johnny and Warren on there. And apart from the fact that Warren calling him a drinker over and over again is driving me insane because he seemed to be mentioning him all the time. It sounded as if we had a great first half, apart from the obvious putting the ball in the back of the net. And it was also painfully predictable, wasn't it? The tactics, the niggly fouls. That, I mean, you'll know a lot more about that than I would, because obviously I've only seen the highlights, so I missed a lot of the mundane stuff that occurred during the game. But it's the typical Everton performance, typical lack of cover from the referees. I did see they showed one with James Garner, blatantly bundled someone over after 20 seconds, didn't even get a free kick for it. We still had possession, admittedly, but we were passing it around in our final third. So I think we should be getting a free kick there. And it does sound, from what Peter said to me after the game, that it was the typical thing. Loads of niggly fouls, getting away with a lot, stifling the play.
Yeah, and, like,
and then being dangerous.
Another thing was like the going down and staying down in the hope that the referee would stop the game. One of the particularly egregious examples when, you know, James Tarkowski blocked a shot, not with his head, I think it was with his chest, his body. He went down. And like, it was a good attacking position. We were just outside the penalty box. And an opportunity to get the ball into the box. Obviously, they had a man down, but it wasn't a head injury. It was not serious. He was just winded. And the referee stops the game.
He lay down, in the 6-yard box, didn't he, pretty much?
Yeah, and it takes
a lot of choice.
Yeah, and he wasted a lot of time. Sean Dyche wants to know where the extra time came from. This was one particular, because it took him about 90 seconds to 2 minutes to resolve this absolutely farcical situation when there was nothing wrong with him whatsoever.
And then they kicked the ball right back up into our half as well afterwards.
Yeah, I was just...
Yeah, no advantage whatsoever.
It was just insane.
And there's the typical fouling where we were winning free kicks. They're screaming and shouting and Dyche is on the touchline remonstrating. Again, there's one moment with Garner. There was another one with McNeil where they picked the ball up. I think Garner's going to thrust it down, doesn't do so, but then rolls it away, which I thought people were getting booked for earlier.
Only our players, I think.
The same thing. It's all
only our players seem to get booked for that. But exactly, yeah. De Zerbi gets booked for that. He got booked for the incident where Tarkowski should have got a second yellow, which was a blatant second yellow. And Dyche is all over, shouts, mouthing off all bloody game and doesn't get a yellow card.
Incredible. Yeah. I could not believe it. I actually thought the ref was quite good in the first half, and annoying for the people that sit near me. I am, I really have to sort myself out and moderate my language a little bit. but I thought he was all right the first half. It was good. And then he starts to, and then literally a minute or two in, he clearly lost control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, but really, despite that, we should have converted that chance.
I think that you're right. A draw is a fair result. I think I think in a way, us going under 10 men gave us an advantage. Because Everton were a bit stuck between, we're a man up, we should be pushing a bit more. And also then kind of try, but also then we want to defend a one goal lead. Whereas actually, ironically, if Tarkowski had gone, they'd have just sat even more men on the box and had 10 men behind the ball, even more so than they did before. And they'd have probably been more effective. But I think they were almost stuck with the, should we go and try and get a second? Should we try and do anything else? And that kind of left them a little bit more, kind of open at times. And we actually looked more dangerous in the last 20 minutes than we had done, except for other than the first 20. And obviously the goal didn't come from that.
We created some good chances.
There's some real scrambles a couple of times in the last 10 minutes or so. Yeah. One of which had about three different blocks, and I think they checked for about two different options for a penalty, neither of which looked like they were. But
no,
but it was. I think actually, and I don't think necessarily the goal came from that. The goal was just a really good cross from Pascal, but that we did create more in the last 15-20 minutes when we just had nothing to lose and we just threw players forward, and they didn't know whether they should. They felt almost they should attack a bit more, but.
Yeah.
The frustration, the Dyche thing is ridiculous. I mean, the fact that he complains about 9 minutes injury time, it's because your team, as Andy says, they do time wasted the whole second half, especially once they won 1-0 up. They rolled around on the floor, and it is always the teams who are the most physical and the most dirty that always time waste the most as well and roll around.
They're
the most physical, but also you go down the most easily.
Quite often they're northern teams, and they do exactly what we were talking about in the last podcast. They say, toughen up, softies from the south, and we're all tough, and they've got these big brash teams like Sheffield United and Burnley. And as you said, they will fall in around. And if you don't want the injury time, Sean Dyche, don't get your team to fake injuries. Simple as that. And the ref was Tony Harrington, by the way. And I'm presuming the two incidents you said in comparison with Billy Gilmore's, I think it probably is a red, but it's kind of, if it wasn't given, it may not get overturned. I'm not sure. But you're talking about in comparison with Caicedo in the cup final, the League Cup final, and Harry Maguire for the
very main. Specifically Maguire, I think. Maguire's was, I would say, possibly worse.
Yeah,
that was definitely. I know it wasn't quite as high, but the way he went in, I would say, is actually worse than Caicedo. You could argue either way.
Yeah, but he's quite wide out to make contact and then sustain contact for a second, isn't he?
I genuinely think Gilmore gets away with that if he plays for Man U. That's my annoyance at the thing. And I'm not advocating for it. It was a silly challenge. He didn't need to do it, and he overran the ball and should have just stopped and held back a bit. But, you know, that sort of thing happens. But I think I think playing for another different team, but a different, he might have got away with it, even with the same referee.
I've been saying it all weekend, so I am going to stick to it. I didn't think it was a red card. I think you give a yellow card for it. I just didn't think it was that much of an endangering tackle because of the nature of it. He was genuinely trying to play the ball, and he went through. He didn't overly swing his leg. There wasn't a lot of velocity behind it. So I would argue that was not dangerous. Now I understand.
But Anana made a meal of it, didn't he? I mean, he was obviously.
And the other guy, it was just sort of coming together of two legs. It was, just a block challenge. Mm. They were both going in for it. It wasn't like a vicious assault. So yeah, you could say it's a foul. And to be honest, they are giving us red cards now. So he's got no grounds to appeal it. It would not get overturned if we were stupid enough to appeal it. So, and I accept that. Mm. But I personally still don't think that challenge was worth a red card, even if technically you might say, it was one. So I can kind of see that. I see that side of the argument. But I did not think it was a bad challenge. It was just foul. You're not going to break someone's leg going in at that thing. It was just challenging. It was not that. I dispute that it was dangerous.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be when I saw it. I thought, oh, okay, yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the concourse and everybody heard what I thought about it.
Calm down, sir. Calm down.
But opinion was split. I mean, lots of my friends were adamant that it was a red.
I think that suggests that whatever decision's made on the field isn't going to get overturned if it's that kind of a decision.
I think that's also the case. I think if that was given as a yellow and they looked at it, they would say, okay, we'll stick with the yellow. So, I think that is kind of a ref's call. But I've seen them given, so...
Yeah, to summarise then, the first half, first of all, the team was, Verbruggen was in goal again. We had Lamptey and we had Igor playing in the wider positions. It was kind of like, it was sort of like a three at the back though, wasn't it, with Van Hecker, Duncan, Igor, from what I can surmise, with Lamptey further advanced than that. Then we had Pascal Grosch and Gilmore, of course, in the middle. Adingra played on the left, where he had been shining more for the Ivory Coast.
I think he played on the side where there was a less attacking fullback. We played our one fit kind of direct winger on the side where Igor was, so Igor could cover. And then Lamptey was the attacking force down the right, basically. It was a kind of like... So we had some pace on both flanks with Mitoma being out.
Yeah, because Buonanotte, Welbeck and Ferguson were the rest of the starting lineup. And, it seemed to all be about Danny Welbeck looking at the highlights in the first half. He had, there's one shot that got blocked just wide. He tried to poke past Pickford when he came out a bit alarmingly from an
edge. I don't know what Pickford was doing there, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, he was lucky not to clatter Welbeck, which could have been a red card. He was lucky that, it could have hit his hand outside the area. It could have almost led to a goal.
He could have prodded it straight in, couldn't he? Just wide, annoyingly.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff seemed to be...
There were a couple of defenders around. I don't know why Pickford came that far out, to be honest. It was very odd.
There's a lot going on around Welbeck, wasn't there? Because obviously we mentioned the very strong challenge by Tarkowski when he totally got turned by the much superior player, in my opinion, Welbeck.
To me, that was, in a new sense, a blue card. It was a really nasty tackle. And Welbeck was down for quite a while.
Yeah, it was me. That was a violent challenge.
Yeah.
He's a thug, Tarkowski, isn't he? He's nasty. How on earth he's got the same number of England caps or something as Dunk is beyond me. He's just a thug.
Yeah, he is a thug, a smug thug sometimes. Don't forget, this is the guy that double handballed it and got away with it, leading to a counter attack and a goal for years ago for Burnley.
And also double-handed pushed Mope in the chest when scoring for them in the first game back after lockdown as well.
He's got away with murder over and over again. He's part of the bogey team factor with Daesh, isn't he?
He literally personifies Daesh's team, doesn't he? In one person, he embodies it in one person. A thug, basically, who's got limited ability but makes up for it by basically just getting away with murder most of the time.
Yeah. And looking at the stats, and this covers the whole of the game, obviously, usual sort of stuff you'd imagine from a game like this, 65% possession to us, 23 shots to their 6, 7 on target to their 3. I'm surprised they got that many, actually. 11 corners to their 3. I'll go into some wider stats that are kind of like a rolling total for our players over the season, which was certainly been enhanced over the recent 2 to 3 weeks when we've been playing Sheffield United and obviously Everton amongst other games. I'll come to that later on. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that certainly the first half was better. The first half of the first half sounded better from the commentary. We were dominant. We looked fast and flowing. And yeah, it's just not
going.
We
didn't get that goal. And that's
second half, it kind of unravelled a bit. And it typically dished, didn't it? I think that's
yeah.
what.
Yeah, we went down to their level sort of thing, didn't we? And kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think we did get dragged into it a little bit because I thought that opening 20 minutes was great. It was just beautiful football. We were just passing it around, particularly.
And you get a goal then. Different
yeah,
game,
the move
isn't it?
The move to set up the first Welbeck chance where it was kind of like the far post from me when he was sort of going towards like the east side of the goal. It did. I think it was either saved or deflected off someone.
I think it deflected. So one that we just couldn't quite poke past the keeper, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a brilliant move.
But that move started on our 6 yard box, and it was just that ball glided across the pitch. It was really, really, really nice, and there was a lot of that. We went used to Adingra a lot.
Yeah.
And I think the final ball could have been a bit better from him today. I think we on Saturday. I think we really missed him. I think having both of them makes a big difference. As good as Lamptey is, he's not Carew. And it was some lovely, lovely stuff. And then, you know, once you know we had sort of been blunted a little bit, you just kind of felt that Everton had got into a rhythm of. You know, where to place themselves on the pitch, you know, because obviously they're extremely well organised and, you know, disciplined in a defensive sense, even if they are slightly ill-disciplined in a foully, niggly sense. But, they know what they're doing and they execute that plan very well. They've got a very good away record. They don't concede a lot of goals away from home and you can see why. Because we weren't really laying, you know, We danced around them a lot, but we weren't really laying too many punches in that first half. A lot of the chances that I think we had 3 headers from the penalty spots from corners that all went straight to Pickford. And I think the first one actually, which I think was Lewis Dunk, and I could see that he was the ball came to him, and then he sort of twisted his head, very much like the Pascal Gross miss against West Ham, where if he'd have actually just headed the ball back in the direction of the travel of the ball, so back against, back against it, but he actually, because he was, I suppose it's like an instinctive thing, you sort of move your head to try and generate some power, whereas actually if he'd have maybe just stayed facing the way he was and he just headed it back, then Pickford would have had no chance.
Yeah, the irony is,
I wonder if they can work on that.
According to the match today, it was the first headed goal Everton have conceded all season was our goal. And yet all our best chances came from headers, arguably.
Yes.
Those two, the third one I think was quite a soft one, but the other two from Van Hecker and Dunk were really powerful headers, and yet even slightly the side of Pickford, he'd probably struggled to save it. And those two were both, I think they should have done more with them. And then the goal as well. I mean, it's to be, I think Dunk's goal was probably a much harder chance than the actual one he headed straight at Pickford.
But that one, he was heading it.
Yeah.
The ball came to him and he headed the ball back rather than trying. Well, obviously, he was not going to head it on because he would have headed it out of play. But that's the header he should have done for that first corner. And I wonder how much of it is just an instinctive reaction when you're jumping and that you've got.
Yeah.
Because, especially when you're in the air, your shoulders are moving as well. But maybe just think, go up and then boom, back the other way, and you might have a bit more success. But, I mean, the actual goal itself was tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Dunk, we mentioned already 400th league appearance, and he scores on it to mark the occasion, which is great. We've got to talk about Pascal Grosch in the build-up there. He sent him for breakfast, lunch and dinner, didn't he, there? I mean, he might as well have not been standing there, the defender. It was beautiful to see. Received the ball in from, was it Dingra? I can't remember who it was now. Cut inside, twisted it back. I'm looking at it now as we talk, actually, and then obviously, curled the ball into the box. Dunk gets between two defenders, heads it in. Beautiful. Bish bosh. Point saved.
The cross had to be perfect because, I mean, as you're saying, they've got so many bigger players than us. Had to be probably for one of the centre halves, and I mean, it was a brilliant header. Also, just as importantly, brilliant header off the line from Tarik Lamptey. I mean, that was insane. I'd given up on that. It's a superb volley. To be fair, they had only really two chances, Everton, all game, or two decent chances, and both of them were really good hits.
That was the best chance of the game. And they created it. It's probably a better chance than we created.
I don't know. It was on the volley, though. It was quite a tough one to. They weren't necessarily that high on XG, I'd have thought, both of those two. They were both kind of quite difficult ones, technique-wise. But, I mean, he hit it brilliantly. And, I mean, I'd given up
on it. Yeah, they weren't actually. 0.29 XG.
Yeah, so it's not huge. They're not. Whereas I'd say Dunk's header from the first corner for the first half would probably be higher than that. I don't know what sort of level it would be, but... brilliant from Tarik Lamptey. That is a goal on its own. You know, it's worth an equivalent of scoring. He was brilliant. And it's ironic, the smallest man on the pitch, and he was the one who headed off the line.
It was hit with some force, so he needed to be quite strong in that.
I was going to say, both
he could have taken his head off,
Both Dunkey and Lamptey there saved us from coming away with no points. As a result of getting the point, we're recording this on 26th of February. It is exactly 6 months now that we've been unbeaten at home in the league or in any domestic competition. The only other game since the West Ham 26th of August match, of course, was the Athens match in Europa, which caused no harm in the end. So that's another little landmark as well. In terms of, I'll come on to player stats for the season later on. Final word on this before we welcome in Phil Annette for part two to talk about the FA Cup. Player of the match for you? Who would you go with?
I thought it's quite tough because I was going to say about the subs as well. Because I thought we struggled a bit, lost momentum a bit with the subs coming on because most of them are just coming back from injury or just haven't quite recovered from injury in the case of Estupiñán, who's not quite hit the same level since injury. And I think that's a problem. We've got too many players at the moment who are just coming back from having been out for a while. And there are a lot of them are attacking options. So we lost a bit of momentum going forward with the subs. I think overall, probably Dunkey, probably because he's got the goal, had a solid game. I thought Verbruggen had a really good game as well. Nothing he could do about the goal. And he looks more dominant. He caught a few decent ones off his line and his distribution's getting better. I thought he had a really good
game.
There
was one good moment for Verbruggen near the end of the game where I think it might have even been when it was 1-1. And Everton had a rare attack. And there was a ball. It looked like it was going to go out for an Everton corner, which would have given them like a very good opportunity right at the death. And he bust a gut to make sure that he got on top of it and he stopped it, which I just thought was a really good effort. Mm. And it was an important one because it would have been like an innocuous.
Yeah,
it just sort of all rebounded off our
play. Yeah, I think he looks like.
I thought he was good belong. As well. Yeah, I thought he was good as well. I
hope he gets a real run because I think him and Steele constantly changing isn't necessarily the best thing. I think especially at his age as well, Steele maybe isn't so hard for him, but at Verbruggen's age, I think he he needs a bit of consistency. I thought Van Hecker had a good game as well. Another one, as always, he seems to be very consistently having a good game.
It's all very good. Well, we got the point. I'm happy with that. Everton, of course, got the 5 points, the one from the weekend, and the four back from their 10-point deduction. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more later in the pod. But we're going to have a break there, and then we're going to welcome Phil Annett in to talk about the FA Cup, because the Albion, of course, next up are playing away at Wolves. So that's coming up in the next part. So welcome back to part two, and we are welcoming back to the podcast Mr. Phil Annett, our FA Fact File legend. Phil, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very well indeed. Thanks, Ross. Always good to talk to you about the FA Cup.
Yes, and what a round we had. I mean, it's not always the most exciting round overall for most neutrals, is it, the fourth round? But when you get a team such as Maidstone United, who are sort of in the playoffs in National League South, I think it's, you'll tell me the details, but it's been a long time since a team of that level has got to the stage that they've now achieved by pulling off by far and away the result of the round, winning away at on form, on fire, high flying championship side Ipswich. What a result that was.
Yeah, outstanding. You know, they took their chances when they had them, and they rode their luck, as anyone needs to do. They only had two shots on target and scored both times. So it's pretty impressive stuff. And yes, they are the only the second team below step five to make it to the last 16 of the FA Cup. Blyth Spartans were the last club to do so back in 77, 78, and people of a certain age still have fond memories of that FA Cup run. And yeah, it's fantastic to see them still standing. They're up against Coventry City in the fifth round. So having beaten one championship side away from home, they're going to feel like, why can't they do it again? And that itself would be FA Cup history in the making if they were able to do so. It'd be the lowest ranked club ever to make the quarterfinals of the competition. So, you know, it's going to be exciting tonight. It's either going to be really close and tense, or, you know, they'll be once bitten twice shy from the championship side.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you can't help feeling that they can't have the same stats as last time and get through. They've got to match Coventry more than they did Ipswich, really. I mean, what was it, 30 odd shots to two or something, wasn't it, in the end? Something insane like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy stats that you see once in a season, once in a decade.
Maybe. Their goals were both brilliant. That first goal, the ball through and the finish were insane. I mean, the ability there was fantastic.
Yeah, there were no defensive errors or goal line scrambles or balls bouncing off someone's hip or anything. This was proper, you know, championship at least, and probably Premier League standard goals there, weren't they? Really well taken.
Yeah, and Coventry will be very wary of that, obviously, having seen how well that they were able to break away. And obviously still fresh in the mind of Coventry fans will be last season's defeat to Wrexham. You know, so they were already knocked out by a non-league club last season, so they won't want a double. Mm-hmm. And the older fans will still remember with bitterness the Sutton United defeat. Yes. Back in 89. So, you know, these wounds are very long time to heal. And you know, they do not want those reopening.
Yeah. What I like about Maidstone as well, George Elokobi's been brilliant, hasn't he? A real personality, a former sort of like high-level player. But he's come in at that level of management, and he's doing a really good job. Seems to really be firing them up with passion and belief and heart, which is part of what's going on with them. And also, the guy Korn, is it, that scored the second goal, is the most old-fashioned looking person I've ever seen in my life. He's got a World War II haircut, and he doesn't look the healthiest of individuals, but he looks in shape. But he looks like he has too many fried breakfasts from his complexion. But who cares, you know? It's all about those sort of players. He looks a classy player, really, and in terms of on the field, he looks great. And I wish them well. Obviously, we're recording this early evening before the game's on. By the time anyone's listening to this, we'll already know if they've succeeded or not. If they have, fantastic work. If you haven't, you've given a bit of credit to yourselves anyway. What are the rest of the previous round then, Phil? What do you make of that? And what do you make of the upcoming fixtures this midweek? Midweek is one of the things to comment on, isn't it, as well? Exactly. A break of tradition, yeah.
Yeah, very unhappy with the state of affairs with the FA Cup as it hits the fifth round.
Yeah, I thought you might be.
Not only getting into midweek fixtures, but also one-off matches, no replays. Mm. You know, all the things that make the FA Cup different and special from other knockout competitions, and it's all been diminished and unfairly as well. It's you know, it's not the cause of fixture congestion. FA Cup replays. It's just something that seems to be unwanted by the owners of clubs at the top of the pyramid, and FA feel the need to sort of kowtow to those demands to keep them interested in the competition. But we are where we are, and yeah, we've not seen many shocks in the FA Cup this season. Aside from Manchester United, who are obviously outstanding, there's only been one Premier League side knocked out by a non-Premier League team, and that was West Ham back in the third round, losing to Bristol City in a replay. So that's been quite unusual to see so few shocks. And, you know, we've got at least one Premier League side in the quarterfinals, non-Premier League side in the quarterfinals because of the match tonight. But there's a fair chance that the other seven places will all be Premier League teams. As a Leeds United fan, of course, I'm hoping that's not the case. Still with a chance of getting into the quarterfinals for the first time in over 20 years. That'd be quite nice for me, who loves the competition like I do, to see my team doing so well. Seem to be cursed on that front, but touch wood, you know, this week might be the week.
Yeah, we were talking on the last pod, weren't we, for the last round, that you'd had this ridiculous run of away draws in the competition. Yes. And lo and behold, you get a home draw and you're through, you know.
Yeah, so we had to win it away from home.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got to save them then. You couldn't resist an away game.
Exactly. And then we've had to an away tie again.
It's a good cup tie in the sense that it was a good, nice big crowd. Plymouth fans looked quite partisan. It was a good atmosphere. I watched most of that game as well. And, yeah, I mean, in the end, it was, you know, Leeds got the edge towards the end, but a decent cup tie in the end. But what do you see happening in this round? Have you got any hunches? And are there any quirky stats beyond what we've already quoted so far for this round coming up?
I learned a long time ago not to predict what's going to happen in the FA Cup because it never, ever turns out as I think it's going to. I think it's quite quirky that we've got AFC Bournemouth there, that if they win against Leicester, that would equal their best ever FA Cup run. So that's quite poor performance for what is in a Premier League side to not have ever gone beyond the last eight of the competition, of course.
Did they get there with Eddie Howe, do you know?
Yeah, they did. It was about 5 years ago or so they were last in the quarterfinals. Mm. But they've never met Leicester in the competition before, so that was another surprise to see those two teams who've played since the 19th century never to have actually met. Mm.
Mm. How many times have we met with Brighton and Wolves played in the FA Cup?
Just the once, and it holds a distinct record in the FA Cup. One of the quirkiest ones that I like to find, in that it's the longest combined names of clubs from the league to have played in the proper rounds of the competition. I think Wolves also played Kidderminster Harriers, which I think matches it. There was a couple of teams from the qualifying rounds who have a much longer combination than the 43 letters that your two teams make up. That's my quirky little stat about Wolves.
What was the score? Sorry? What was the score when Brighton played, when we played Wolves?
Wolves won 3-2, I believe. So revenge should be on your mind to try and get that back.
It's been all I've been thinking about for weeks.
Yeah, you can tell I'm really, really angry about it.
I can tell it's simmering under the skin.
Having not known it happened. Just
waiting for it to come out. I can see that.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. I rate Gary O'Neill. I think he's doing a good job. It's going to be a tricky fixture. We've been away from home in all three rounds so far, and I don't know. I suppose it must have been a number of times that people have gone the whole way through with drawing away games at each of the rounds where there is a home ground involved. But I've got a funny feeling if we do get through, we're going to get another away game. It might be one of those. Could be a Leeds. You never know. They're going to be drawn at home all the time, aren't they?
Maidstone away.
Yeah.
Maidstone would be nice.
How'd you perform?
I'm not sure I'd get into that. I think it'd probably be a massive fight for tickets.
Hmm. Quite possibly.
It'd be quite funny to go from playing Roma home to Maidstone away, though. That would be an interesting kind of jump in a space of like 3 days. Or
yeah, we have got to beat Wolves first, though, Pete. I've got to say,
yeah, it's a tough game.
The 3-2 victory to Wolves sounds rather prescient. to me. I think this is going to be a. I think it's going to be a really difficult game, and I make Wolves the favourites.
They should have won at the Amex in January in the league game.
They could have done.
I think
they have the chances, and we didn't really great much.
This game. I think that they're so far removed from the team that we beat 4-1 earlier in the season. They're really good now. They're in excellent form.
And you could argue we are quite removed as well from that team, in a sense that no March, no Nciso probably from the start, probably no Matoma from the start.
That team has been removed.
Yeah.
Physically, but...
Gilmore, of course, as well. It's fun.
Yeah,
Yeah, because the ban carries into the cup, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel that we're treading water whilst we're waiting for everybody to be... reasonable quorum of people to be fully fit and up and running. As Peter alluded to earlier, we've got a lot of people that are just coming back from injury. We don't know how 100% they are. And we're playing a lot of matches. But this is an important game. I think, it's great that we're seventh in the league, but I think that is going to be a difficult position to defend.
We've got a really tough run in, haven't we? So.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult... It's not an impossible position. Position to defend, but I think the two cup competitions just present us with such a great opportunity, for success and a historic moment for the club, first of all. But if you are really hell bent on getting us European qualification for next season, then really winning one of the two cup competitions, I would argue, is the way that we're going to do it, and
in the most fun way as well.
Yeah, without a doubt, the most fun way to do it, and yeah, which is why I'm really, really nervous about this Wolves game, because I've just got a sneaky feeling Wolves are going to take that dream away, and having come so close last season with the penalty shootout and the final, I'm in the semi final. I think I'm confident if we were in that position again. To play like Man United or even Man City in the semi-final, I think we'd beat them.
But it could be a really tough quarter-final.
I don't think we're going to beat Wolves tomorrow. Wednesday is a real weird position.
It could be a really tough quarter-finals because there's some really big teams who are playing teams who aren't so big. So it could be a really, really interesting kind of top-level quarter-final with obviously Coventry and then potentially Bournemouth or Leicester, because Bournemouth's struggling a bit at the moment. But everyone else is probably going to be top half. Or at least 11th, whatever, if Chelsea get through. Phil, what sort of Chelsea do you think you'll face tomorrow? One a bit down after yesterday, or one desperate to kind of like compete in a one competition they've really got left?
Well, I was pleased how yesterday's game went. For them to have gone 120 minutes and then lost it at the death was both soul-destroying and sapping of energy.
Yeah.
Of course, they've got a deep squad and who knows what team they're going to put out. Maybe they've learned a lesson about playing with kids. I don't know. Maybe they'll put the kids out. I think we've got Leeds have got, nothing to lose. It's a free hit for us, as always, in these situations. We've never beaten Chelsea in the FA Cup, so that's something I would like to see put right. Mm. 5 times we've faced them and lost every time. In fact, the last time we met was in the Cup final in 1970. Interesting stat about that. Well, I say interesting. It's the last time two teams met in a Cup final that had never won the Cup before. So we've now gone over 54 years since we've had a final where both sides are yet to have lifted the trophy.
Yeah,
so that's the last time.
Maidstone in this year's final would be like that.
That is an incredible stat.
It is, isn't it? Yeah,
it is hard to imagine. And funny enough, the previous one was Leeds Liverpool in 1965, which again is a bit of a shock that Liverpool hadn't won it up until that time.
Yeah.
Like the fourth or fifth best team in the competition's history.
So, yeah, it really is. Go on. Yeah,
I was going to say that match was watched by 29.8 million people, I think. So I don't know whether we'd expect to get the same kind of viewing figures at ITV4 for this fifth round tie, but it should be interesting if they can give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of, obviously, if we get through, if Leeds get through, in both our cases, we'll be hoping that there'll be some nice, horrible clashes between some of the big guns, obviously, and kind of filter them out a little bit. And then, as you said, get a Maidstone or maybe a Bournemouth or something like that. But we've got to get through the round, first of all. Wolves is going to be difficult. I agree with you, Andy. I think that's going to be a tricky one. Our record overall against them, of course, is pretty good. I've got the head-to-head here, actually. We, in all competitions, we've won 19, drawn 15, and lost 8. So not too bad, but they are trickier in the recent couple of games.
They are, although they were pretty poor yesterday against Sheffield United. That's the one made me think maybe that, you know, it's, they're not quite the, you know, they were. I thought they were very lucky to win yesterday.
And they had to play later than we did, obviously, as well, which is quite nice from our point of view. Yeah. In terms of Wolves, have they? What's their record in the cup, Phil? Do you know that they? I don't know if they've won it or not. I think they probably have, haven't they, at some point?
Yeah, several times. Off the top of my head, I think 4 times.
Yeah.
But not since 1960. No.
But not since the Billy Wright era sort of thing, around that sort of time.
Yeah. Pretty strong.
2019, it could have been Brighton Wolves in the final, because both of you were beaten semi-finalists that season. So
yeah, they were two up, weren't they, against Watford threw it away.
Yeah, I bet Watford wished they didn't throw it away.
Yes.
That was a 6-0 final, wasn't it? Or?
Yeah.
It was, yeah. That was a disaster for Watford. But no, it's like you, I think, did you play Sheffield United earlier in the competition this season?
We did, yeah, last round.
That could have been last season's final. So you seem to be setting a little bit of a trend here.
Oh, see, I wish that was last season's final. That would have been brilliant. Same result.
We have been scoring a lot of goals, actually, in this competition. I know earlier in the comp, Aldershot were top of the pile, weren't they? But their massive scoring, including that wacky, was it 7-4 at Swindon?
Yeah.
Where they were 7-0 up. We've scored, obviously, we've scored free scoring at Stoke and Sheffield United. Obviously, if we don't get through our fixture this midweek, we won't end up being top scorers. But do you know what the overall record is for numbers of goals scored in one tournament? Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here. If you haven't got that to hand, don't worry. But
the highest score is, I think, 40. So you've got a long way to go to get anywhere near that. But
aren't we close to the top of that? Because when the year that we ended up not being having to qualify because we weren't in the we won like 10-0 or something in the first qualifying round. And
yeah, you had 9 games and you did score a lot of double figure results on that run. But 40 is the most that I'm aware of.
That's going to be tricky.
But shouldn't that happen these days? The team forgot to register.
I know. It's not happened for a while, but it has happened more often than people realise.
Really?
A dozen times or so over the time.
Wow.
Oh, man, magnificent. Well, we're going to break off for our FA Cup part. In part 3, we'll talk about on any other business, a few other bits to chat about. Phil, I don't know, would you want to stay on for that, or are you going to...
I've got to go.
Very quickly then, just give us your contact details. Well, not contact details, your follower details online.
Your home address and your mother's maiden name.
Yeah, I'm a bank details as well. Is that what you want?
Yes, yeah, pet's name and all that. Yeah.
I run a couple of accounts on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File for that competition, the FA Cup, and at FA Vars Fact File for that other national competition. And you can go through the FA Cup Fact File one to read my previews of the 5th round. Plus, I've done a special blog on the 11 non-league clubs that have made it to the last 16 in the competition in the past that may stand to achieve this season.
Oh, right. Fantastic.
That's a good read.
Really good, yeah. Thanks for joining us as always, Phil.
Yeah, thanks much, Phil.
We might get you on again if we continue our interest in the Cup this year, possibly. If there's some reason to get you in later on, we will do. But if not, I'm looking forward to next year when it all starts again and you get... How many is it that enter at the first from the off?
Well, you in that extra premier round, you have over 400 clubs competing in that first round, and 730-odd in total take part in the competition.
Yeah. Incredible.
And many more would love to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course, there's plenty more would like to and can't. And I mean, that is the beauty of it, isn't it? That's the real heart of this competition for me. I'm with you 100%. I know that's where your passion lies with those early rounds. And it really is great. I love watching all those games when someone like Mansfield or Cheltenham are the giants to be killed in an early round, or even before that with the non-league. You know, there's various stages you go through, and it's great. It's always great to see. So excellent. Until next time, thanks for joining.
Put your entry in again, and then you'll better experience it for real with Brighton.
Yes, I'll get on to Tony Bloom, get him to screw that up for next season. Yeah. It'd be brilliant if we did it as winners. Imagine we won the thing and then forgot to enter. That'd be even funnier. We wouldn't care at that point, would we? Really, if we'd already won. Phil, thanks as always. Cheers.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you guys. Cheers.
So, yes, thanks again to Phil Annetts for joining us there for the FA Cup section of the podcast. Really looking forward to the game on Wednesday, albeit I'll only be watching at home. I'm still budgeting to give myself more time and money to spend on European trips, hopefully. And we were just talking off air about how excited we are and how quickly it's coming up as well. Just now moved into the next week already, of course, because it was all happening around Friday. We're now only a week away, just over a week away from the trip. Can't wait. We'll obviously do a match day special or a match trip special, I'm sure, when the time comes. But coming back to this episode, I did promise some stats, and here they are. Sky rolling these off on their Sky Sports News channel. But I think they're getting more interesting now because a couple of other names have popped up that weren't on there before of an Albion flavour. In the most assists category, Ollie Watkins and Kieran Trippier are now top with 10 each. Joint second is Pedro Neto of Wolves, who, of course, has come back into action recently. Mohamed Salah of Liverpool and a certain Mr. Pascal Grosch. Notice I'm saying Grosch and not Grosch, Peter. We've been chastised by our regular listener, friend of the show, Dan H., who said it's not. I'm not having this Grosch shit. It's Grosch.
I thought he was level top now.
He's apparently not, according to...
I thought he had 10 now after the weekend and...
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just going with their stats. Let's roll with that. I mean, you might be right. But most chances created, he's joined top on, so that might be what you're thinking of.
No, I thought he was gone top of the assist list as well.
Okay. Not sure. But on the chance creation list, Bruno Fernandes, one of my least favourite footballers of all time, is top with 74. Oh, yeah, sorry, he's one ahead of Pascal Grosch with 73. And then you've got Odegaard, 66, Trippier and Saka on 63. In other categories, he's been right up there for the whole of the season, actually, Lewis Dunk on this one. Most touches, Rodri is way out ahead, 2743. Lewis has got 2,503 touches over the season, which is madness. But Pascal Grosch is now up into third place with 2,464 entering the list for the first time. Trippier and Saliba behind them, a few hundred behind. Most passes, Rodri again is top with 2,416, Lewis with 2,296. Then you've got Saliba, and then you've got Pascal Grosch with 1,961, and Jean-Paul Van Hecke is on 1,875 in fifth place, entering one of their stats for the first time. Not too bad, eh? Pretty good. But it shows, I think it's finally, the stats are starting to reflect maybe a little bit more, just quite the influence that Pascal's having in particular. And obviously continuing to show in the case of Lewis as well. They are still underrated, aren't they, really, I suppose? Maybe this.
I mean, not by us, I don't think. Not by De Zerbi, because, I mean, he's basically said Pascal is the first name. It's a team sheet with plus him. And Dunkey's probably next on the line. So I don't think that they're the two, arguably, he doesn't ever rest, doesn't ever really give time off to. And so I would say not underrated by Albion fans, maybe by Premier League fans. Maybe by journalists, that sort of thing. But I mean, yeah, probably our two most important players, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. These sort of, as of after the weekend's game, by the way, I don't know how accurate they are, but certainly it does seem to.
Yeah, suggest that. Grosch has definitely got 10 assists now because he set the one up at the weekend.
Yeah, well, I thought so. I thought he must be on that.
He definitely has. I've seen him top of that list. Also, yeah. Bizarrely, Watkins, I think, has 10 assists from an expected assist of 3 or something. So whoever's taking the chances from him is doing really well.
Or he keeps miss-kicking it into the path of his teammates or something. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, it would suggest that he's passing to someone like Estupiñan's assist for like Mitoma at Wolves, for example, you know.
Yeah.
That'll be one assist, but probably an expected assist of 0.00001.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Andy, sorry, you wanted to come in on that as well.
I was just going to say, I think people are talking about Pascal a lot more now. When you listen to things like the Times podcast or Football Weekly or the Totally Football show, Pascal's name comes up quite a lot, more than Dunk's does.
Hmm.
Also, I think there's an appreciation of Dunk. I think the assist ratio for Pascal is is crazy. He's got his germ. He's now being called up to the national side, and people like talking about how he costs like 50p. And just like, you know, that, I mean, people like talking about, like, you know, pound, you know, best pound per pound per pound.
Yeah, there's a narrative to that, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, and he's one of them. Like, you know, £3.5 million for like one of the best midfielders in the Premier League is just crazy. And you know, he's just brilliant. We can't, you know, I mean, you know, 2 years ago I was saying he's too old and slow. Yeah, you know, I've looked stupid after many of my football comments. But I think that is by far and away the most egregious error that I've ever made in football analysis. I think I was just never been so happy to be so wrong, because he's undroppable for us. And like, you know, if he's not in the side, it's a massive, massive miss.
And looking at that game at the weekend, you've got Grosch setting up Dunk, the two players we've just been talking about. Summed it up. And also Van Hecker, as we earlier mentioned, had a good game in that match as well. And yeah, those three are on those stats lists, and they're showing what they can do. And it's great to see. Speaking of the Everton game as well, well, not the Everton game itself, but the aftermath, they'll be disappointed having got so close to getting the win that they were forced into the more justifiable draw, as far as I'm concerned. However, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, they have actually got 5 points this weekend, because the 10-point deduction has been reduced to 6 on appeal. There was a general thought that that would probably get reduced to some degree. I've no idea if that's fair or not. Who knows, really?
I mean, it makes the rules pointless, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's...
It does a
bit, 6
yeah.
points when you've overspent the way they have over the years, and the general disdain they've had for the rules is kind of like, well... Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I think the argument was that they got, was it one more point than Leicester did for going into administration? And that does at least kind of like negate that argument now, saying, well, you've got less of a points deduction than Leicester, so it's more proportional in that sense. I don't really know what the right amount of points would be. How do you kind of quantify that? It's difficult.
I think 10 was right, personally.
Yeah.
That's fair quite enough. A big chunk of a season's points. 6 yeah. feels like it's 2 wins. It's not that much. They've broken the rules consistently over the years, you know, just absolutely taking the piss. And yeah, clubs like us who've actually stood by, you know, follow the rules and, you know, kind of been financially stable, we deserve. And I don't think the administration ones are fair either. I think teams like Palace and Leicester got away with it massively over the years. I remember being in the Championship with Dean and thinking, you know, these clubs who've been in administration have still got this squad, multi, you know, million-pound squad, and they're coming and competing against us on our tiny budget, and it's really not fair then either.
Well, I think, Andy, the toughest thing here from this bit of news is for Forest, really, isn't it? Because both Everton and Forest still have the potential for points deductions to come for a separate scenario. We don't know if it'll be a similar quantity of points deducted, if there is any at all. But at the moment, it's put Forest down into the firing line. They're just above the dividing line at the moment. Everton have gone up 2 places as a result. So the table at the moment is Sheffield United 13, Burnley goal difference ahead of them. Then the 7-point gap to Luton on 20. There's now a 4-point gap from Luton. Well, they're obviously, they suffer as well with this decision, Luton, obviously. Luton are 4 points adrift now, but it's now from Nottingham Forest on 24. Brentford are on 25, but they've got a game in hand on Forest and Everton.
That's tonight, isn't it? They're playing yeah. West Ham tonight.
Luton do have a game in hand as well, I should mention. And then Everton are now above, obviously above Brentford on goal difference because of the deduction on 25. And then you've got Bournemouth and Palace on 28. So, yeah, I mean, if for a minute you imagine that Everton and Forest both get, say, 5 or 6 point deductions, that's going to put Forest right in the mire. No one was really talking about Forest before, but they're really in a very precarious position now, aren't they? Especially with Luton showing so much fight at the moment.
I think, I kind of expect Forest to get a 6-point deduction now rather than one that's going to be sort of appealable. If they, you know, if the authorities feel they over-egged the Everton one, then so be it. I personally think it's completely farcical. I think the narrative about how Everton have been hard done by is completely bogus. I mean, I think that's exacerbated by the fact of how terrible they've been. I mean, they've cheated, but they've got nothing in return for it. I mean, you know, I mean, man, yeah, and I know there's the I do understand the frustration. Well, what about Man City and Chelsea? I completely get that, and those teams need punishing, but the cases are not the same. It was a one regulation. It was clear cut that they'd broken it, and they'd admitted it. And I suppose they wanted some, you know, mitigation for that, but they'd done it, and you know, but they hadn't benefited from it because they've spent that money really badly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the people they shouldn't be angry at the FA. They should be angry at themselves for not knowing what a good footballer looks like, because they don't buy any. You know, yeah, I mean, well, yeah, Deitch is keeping that. Deitch is keeping that team together. He's very limited in what they can do. So he maximises.
Yeah.
He maximises. Well,
that's why Everton's rather like up themselves fan base. They've actually accepted Deitch. Whereas like when Allardyce was there, one or two others, they basically hounded them out because they thought they should play a certain way of certain style of football. But I think they've finally accepted now that their squad's not up to it.
For the rest of us, it's just like turgid football year after year of them just occupying a spot in this division. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it almost reminds me of like Houghton S. Brighton, but then, you know, we came into the Premier League with like no Premier League style budget whatsoever, a slightly more limited group of players. And we had to do that because we're just trying to finish 17th first couple of seasons. But you can't sustain that. But I mean, Everton, just boring football all the time. It's just joyless sort of having a go at Everton here. But like, what is the point of Everton right now? You know, you've got some history. You've got a big, you know, big fan base that turns up. It's very passionate. They were when they actually did sing on Saturday, they were very loud. But it was they were waiting until they scored.
Yeah, it is a trick.
And it's just like, oh, isn't it sad about Everton? No, it's not. They broke the rules. You look at Luton; they're, you know, a team that suffered badly from didn't they get a 30-point deduction?
Yeah, they did.
So, no, I'm not having it. Luton are within the rules at the moment. They're fighting hard, and this team has just decided to like throw caution to win. I mean, Everton's just an incredibly badly run club. They're now being, you know, I do actually fear for their fans now, because I think whatever's going to happen with this 7-7 takeover, you know, I mean, it shouldn't happen. They're not fit and proper persons. It does. I mean, I think that's why the league are dragging their thing. But when they say no, Everton are screwed, because 7-7 have lent them loads of money, and they'll probably want that money back straight away, and they do not have it.
Yeah.
So
they are a mess, aren't they? They really are in a mess. And I mean, it's not, Deitch hasn't benefited from the players, you're right. And if they put the 6 points back on, because I don't think that's on him that they've got the 25 points, they'd be on 31 already. And that's playing attritional football. It's not what I like to see. I respect his ability to get a tune out of teams doing that, because it's not easy. Nonetheless, but it's just not enjoyable.
Well, I'm not sure they'd be on 31 without that points deduction, to be honest. I think that galvanised them, and they really kind of had a good run after it happened.
Maybe. Yeah, that might be true.
I'm not sure they'd have had that really good run of 3-4 wins in the space of 6 games, whatever it was, without that.
One thing for sure, Peter, what Andy just said there about Luton. I mean, Luton must be so pissed off with this, because they've, in the past, in a different scenario, as you said, had the 30-point deduction.
Yeah.
They're seeing Everton get 10-point deduction. Okay, maybe proportionally that might be about right. I don't know. I think they felt pretty aggrieved with the 30 points. I remember that.
The 30 points was embarrassing. I mean, a football league should be ashamed of themselves for that.
They must be thinking, oh, good, at least we'll get some sort of comeback here. And then half of the comeback nearly has been
away, which is really strange. The whole thing's an absolute farce, and it shows how badly run the Premier League is. And Everton fans have behaved pretty appallingly and moaning and that sort of thing. And the way they've reacted, and it's like, well, you deserve it. You broke the rules. Yes, all right, you can point to Man City or whatever, but Man City could yet still be given a huge point deduction. That it's an ongoing process, and just because Man City did doesn't mean you've got a right to break the rules while the rest of us have stuck to it.
I think when they eventually get round to adjudicating on the City, they're getting relegated. It's just a matter of how many divisions.
Whoa, but, think so?
Yeah,
it's quite a prediction. I don't think they will. I think they'll bottle it.
Not with that many charges. The amount
they'll probably find them guilty of some though, but not all of them or something. They'll find a way. I've got zero faith in the Premier League, to be honest.
I reckon they'll give them a just about achievable points deduction, achievable in terms of getting out of relegation zone. Could be quite entertaining, but
they'll be excluded from Europe for a year or two.
There's precedent with what happened with Juventus.
There is. In Italy,
with Rangers in Scotland. These things. And like, you know, and it would mean nothing to City if that happened to them. They'd suck it up and they'd get back pretty much straight away. But even if that happens, you know, they've won the Premier League multiple times. They've won the Champions League. They've got a good chance of winning the Champions League. Their fans have watched some exceptional football over the years. So, yes, they have financially doped their team. But their fans have had a massive reward out of it. They've got loads out of it.
And Everton, the paradox is, if they get relegated...
Everton, all they've got is a nasty hangover.
If City get relegated...
Their doping has not worked. They're on the financial dope.
Andy, if City get relegated, they'll have the extra bonus of they'll be winning games every week anyway and having a promotion to celebrate. It won't be the same as winning titles, but it's not as if they're going to be in abject misery completely. They'll be able to go around some new grounds again. You know, some of the grounds that have been updated, or teams that weren't in there last time they're in League One or the Championship. You know, it's not as bad as it could be. It's not my idea of utter misery, but we'll see what happens. But in terms of Everton,
I think for the credibility of, I mean, you could argue that the financial, you know, there's a debate about, you know, what purpose do these rules serve? Why are they in place? What is it that they are trying to prevent? Are they trying to prevent clubs spending irresponsibly to prevent clubs going out of business? Or is it just simply like a sort of cap style thing to ensure some sort of parity in the game? At the moment, the rules seem to be badly drawn up and they seem to fulfil neither purpose.
Yeah, I think they were originally aimed at trying to stop clubs overspending. The problem is, in doing that, it just increases the domination of the teams with the most money. Yeah. And that's always been the issue for me. And my view is partly that if you are a billionaire and you support Accrington Stanley, why shouldn't you go and invest billions of pounds in Accrington Stanley and build them up to being one of the biggest sides in the country? Now, obviously, in reality, that doesn't happen. And it's people like the Saudi Arabian owners of Newcastle who do that, and then basically you're owned by a country, which means you've got infinite money, and then you throw it. Well, obviously Newcastle would be a lot better now if you didn't have financial fair play, because they would have, you know, the ability to go and overspend rather than worrying about financial fair play, etc. The frustration for me is it does also mean that the likes of Man U and Liverpool and Chelsea, you know, are given an advantage because they've got more income.
I mean
bigger clubs are going to have an advantage because they've got more income. Well, that doesn't seem... I don't have a problem with that. You've got more income. I mean, we benefit from a benevolent owner. So we now have money, more money. So I'm not entirely against your point, Peter, even though it just gives free rein to a smaller number of clubs to continue their dominance. It does seem to be designed to do it. But if City aren't if they aren't punished suitably, then these rules will just have to be thrown out, because the credibility of them will just be wrong, because they would have essentially got away with it.
Yeah.
And other teams will do it, and that will be like your Real Madrid.
I think whatever happens,
PSG, Barcelona. I mean, these financial superpowers of European football just sort of make a mockery of the game. But I think there's room for regulation in football, but it but the top teams will not have a proper one because they won't talk about redistribution of wealth in no. football.
And that's which, the problem.
Like, you know, in the NFL, ironically, there's a much better system,
yeah.
which is more equitable, which gives more teams chances.
Speaking of spendthrifty kind of big clubs with big attitudes and car crash clubs, Ballbag FC, aka Chelsea, losing the cup final was obviously amusing from our point of view as non-Chelsea lovers. It was also quite convenient from the European point of view, wasn't it, as well, because that keeps the European place open through the league routes, wherever that might sit in terms of this, you know, the European coefficient, which might get us a fifth Champions League place, and then sixth and seventh will be Europa, eighth will be the conference. But we can't rely on that. We might need to get into seventh to qualify through the league route. So Chelsea losing was quite handy. It's also quite funny from our point of view. So that's one bit of good news. Wanted to talk very briefly about Sunderland. Don't know, mispronounced that one. Sorry about that. Yeah, they've got their new third and final part of their series on Netflix, Sunderland Till I Die. Looking forward to watching that. If you really want to see car crash clubs, that really is the one to look at, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. Clubs who rather more sadly are struggling, though. Torquay and Rochdale have been having some serious problems. Rochdale are not getting the funding. They seem to be stuck in a bit of a rut in terms of getting new funding in. There are some potential new investors, but there's a lot of tie-ups with small stakeholders that aren't allowing their shares to potentially be sold. So finding the right buyer that's prepared to take it on the terms that it's been forced to be available on are not looking good. Torquay have applied to go into administration as well. Two big clubs who are currently in non-league, but are not traditionally non-league clubs at all. Bit of a worry there. Some better news in non-league, though. Certainly not on the playing front. Worthing back-to-back defeats, which is a bit of a gutter. Braintree doing the bloody double over them. That was a bit of a nightmare. But for your old one of your old local teams, Andy and Peter, Barnet, some interesting and exciting news from them, isn't there? They're going to move back to, well, almost the same site in Underhill, general location, aren't they?
Pretty much exactly where it was.
Yeah, well, the actual proposed stadium that Barnet wanted to build before the Tories
first place, yeah,
turned it down.
This is a new council, I'm presuming, because Clanathos didn't get on at all with the council at the time, did he? That was it was better on their part, wasn't it? Pretty much.
Yeah, I'm still annoyed about it because it was well, you know, Barnet historically has been very, very conservative, and then in 1997 it became Labour, and then. The Iraq War happened and it went back to being a Tory council. And the guy that was running the council was an absolute rabid anti-football git who just loathes football. He wanted Barnet out. And they got their way. You know, that club has been there for over 100 years. And well, they built a school there now, so I hope the residents are really happy with the peace and quiet that will give them. But
it's like the same short-sightedness of Lewes District Council and Falmer Council and that sort of thing. When you look at the money that, you know, Lewes has got out of Brighton being at Falmer, the number of people who go to Lewes before the game, after the game, never been really that much trouble in Lewes, if any. And the amount of money that's brought to the economy, and yet, yeah, Lewes District Council, if they'd had their way, we'd have been nowhere near there.
Yeah, so
I think it's about wanting football types in the area, wasn't it? More than anything, in both cases,
they wouldn't even allow them to go to Poptor, where Saracens are now.
But we'll let
a Premier League rugby club build a stadium there and kick Barnet out to Harrow. They're playing the Middlesex Senior Cup now. I know this is not interesting at all to our listeners, but.
That's all right. Well,
it grinds my gears.
I've seen them play a number of times. Underhill's one of my most visited grounds, London grounds. Obviously, that tally has stopped racking up as then it's no longer there, as you said. It's a school now. But I've been to the Beehive as well. The Hive, sorry. It's not quite a nice little venue there, but obviously it's not, you know, it's not in Barnet. And that's the whole point. It's coming back to Barnet. Mm. And it is for anyone that's been to Underhill. You've got the cinema and a pub up on the high road there, and then just a short way along, tucked down slightly on the south side, isn't it, of the road, is where the ground used to be. And then just behind that, there's some playing fields and some green spaces, and it's somewhere in there, which is where they're going to now develop. So just slightly south of where the original ground was. I don't know how long they were at Underhill, but a number of years. But it's good. It's good news anyway. It's good news.
About a hundred or so years, or there at
all the time. Yeah, I thought it must have been. I'm going to have one final rant as well. I've been watching the EFL highlights today, and this has been pissing me off for quite a long time. The Ronaldo celebration, which is the most pathetic, cringing and horrendous celebration, as in the Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, his Sue thing where he jumps and turns from one direction to the other and does that arrogant little pose that really is cringing. There's now a player who's actually a pretty decent player, Brazilian, called Ronald. I think they were pronouncing it Ronald on the commentary, who's playing for Swansea. And he's doing the celebration. Obviously, he's playing up to the name, but he's doing that celebration. There was a guy called Gabriel who scored for Blackpool as well. He was doing it. I'm naming and shaming it because I find it repulsive. It's the most shit celebration in the history of football. And that's saying something. And why do people keep copying it? It's not your own celebration. Get your own idea. And you're not going to be praised by association with Ronaldo just because you score a goal in, you know, for some team in League One and then just jump around like an idiot. Anyone else share my irritation with that type of thing?
I mean, I'm not that bothered, I'm honest.
It is a rubbish celebration, though.
It's suitable for him, I suppose.
There are far more annoying things in football.
I don't know. That gets my goat a lot.
That'll be it.
Yeah, I mean, there are worse things, of course. But I like to moan about all sorts, Peter. You know, keep it fresh.
I like to vary your moans about various things.
Absolutely, yeah. You can't just moan about anything.
Keep it fresh. Keep it interesting.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I'll add that to my latest list. It might be goal celebration moans. We'll have to reprise cliche of the week as well at some point. And difficult place to go is going well. We've got Scarborough on the list now as well for some reason. And bizarrely, Leeds hadn't been on until recently. But they're in the list as well now. We're up to about 65, I think. So that's
given a train strike, Roma could be a difficult place to get to rather than...
Yes.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, there's supposedly going to be quite a lot of industrial action. A general strike is being described across the Rome area on the 8th, which is the Friday, which is when a lot of people will be travelling back, me included. I know some of you are staying longer, but for us proles that have got to get back to work, you know. It's going to be, hopefully it's not going to be as much of a problem as it might be, especially as I've got to go back to Milan to get my return flight as things currently stand. But we'll see how that works out. Fingers crossed. And that is, of course, just next week. Despite that, we've got to get another game out, another two games out of the way. We've got Wolves on Wednesday, FA Cup. Any thoughts on that? I think it's going to be tough. As we've already said it, haven't we, really?
I agree with Andy. I think Wolves are favourites with us having so many games and still so many injuries.
It's got to be settled on the day.
Being at home,
it's got to be settled on the day, which will be a good thing in this case. I agree with Phil about, you know, you don't want to disrupt the tradition.
Yeah, but we can't afford a replay.
Not at the moment. Not for us.
In fact, I have no idea when we'd actually play it if we did have a replay.
Exactly. It's going to be a tricky one. And then Fulham at the weekend. So, Andy, your thoughts on those games?
Well, both difficult games. I mean, we've got three difficult away games in just over... You know,
difficult
just over...
places to go, Andy.
So a lot of travelling. Fulham's going to be tough, but they're a hit and miss side. But you know, some weeks they're really good. They beat Man United this weekend and deserve to win it. So it was nice to see them not mess it up after their FA Cup meltdown last season, where they were miles better than them until they decided to chuck the game away in the last 15 minutes. It depends which Fulham we play. I mean, if we play the good one, it's going to be difficult. Also, it depends which Brighton turns up. I mean, I think we need Mitoma back. We need Mitoma back. We'll need to see what happens in the middle with the Gilmore replacement, with Belaba and Moda, which is, you know, I mean, it's sad for Billy that he's out, but this is a really good opportunity for either Carlos or Jakob. One that they probably wouldn't have got if Gilmore was fit.
I actually don't think it's bad timing if he had to miss three games. Yeah. With the European games coming up, he'll stay fresh for them. Yeah. And, you know, one of them is at least in the Cup. And you know, there's two winnable games on paper, although I realise we haven't actually beaten Fulham in the Premier League. So it's not really that winnable. But we've paid time and time again for that ridiculous game in the Championship where they absolutely battered us and we somehow won 2-1.
Yeah. We mugged them a lot in the Championship. Quite often we undeservedly beat Fulham.
The last time we played them was crazy. I mean, I think they missed a penalty. They had chance after chance, went ahead, and then we scored twice in the space of 2 minutes, and then they battered us again afterwards.
The game, the other side of the Roma match, of course, is Forest at home on the Sunday. That's not going to be easy, and it's a juggling act, isn't it? Getting who plays when. In terms, I'm going to end on a stat actually, and this is a great one. Fulham, in terms of league games, our head to head against Fulham is very intriguing at the moment because we've won 20, we've drawn 7, and we've lost 20. Both sides have scored 66 goals in those 47 games, so it couldn't be more evenly split at the moment.
That's ridiculous,
isn't it?
I'm guaranteed to be a draw at the weekend.
So
then.
Many matches.
I think that's stat of the month. That one,
guaranteed draw at the weekend.
Someone told me a few weeks ago after we last played them that the stats are now like that after our last game. But yeah, I can't remember who told me actually. But what a crazy stat! So that's going to be a score draw, isn't it? Then got to keep that going. Anyway. On to the next one. So I will probably be doing a mini review, possibly with the gent after the Wolves game. So we'll get a bit of opinion on that one for that. And then we will do a match day special, I think, Peter, at the weekend.
Yeah, sounds
game.
Good.
You'll be there as well, Andy, at the game?
Yes, I will be there.
We'll let you know where we are. Maybe meet for a beer. Who knows? Excellent. All right, guys, thanks for joining us as ever. Thanks to Phil from earlier as well. Boys, up the Albion, stand or fall.
Up the Albion.
The Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.